This is Under Load, the Sunday edition of the Upward Arc. I'm Andre, I'm a physician, and this is the edition for Sunday, the 30th of August, 2026. A quick note before we start. What you're about to hear is the written newsletter, adjusted a little for the spoken word. Some of the numbers are rounded, and I've left the citations out because nobody wants to hear me read reference numbers aloud. Every study I mention is fully referenced in the written edition. You'll find it at andreheck.com. Today, the morning 60 kilos stopped moving, and why the one thing I never counted as work turned out to be the thing deciding how much I could carry. I slid 20 kilos onto each side of the bar and stepped under it. I'd started in my home gym with just the empty bar, and even that felt heavier than normal, a weight I usually lift without thinking. Now the bar was 60 kilos. 10 reps at that weight are usually just a warm-up for me. I know my body and what it can handle. This should have been easy. At 60 kilos, I felt straight away that something was off. I felt weak. My muscles wouldn't work the way they normally do. I tried jumping to wake myself up. I slapped my face. I turned up the music, hoping for some kind of burst of energy. By the 5th rep, I had to stop and reset. This isn't a warm-up. If it had only happened once, I'd have called it a bad session and moved on. But it kept going for a week or two. When I say I was doing everything right, I mean everything my career had taught me to do. My body needed something else. I was doing everything right, except for the one thing I never thought of as work. I believed anyone could do it if they wanted it badly enough and went after it. Discipline was always at the center of what I believed. If something was tough, I pushed through. When my days got busy, I slept less. If I had 30 free minutes, I filled them with something productive. I was proud that I never just sat on the couch. I also thought the usual rules about rest and recovery didn't apply to me. I'm the one who's built differently. I believed I could manage on 4 or 5 hours of sleep. My favorite saying was, I sleep when I'm dead. Not giving my best felt like wasting time. I was proud of that attitude, and it helped me for most of my career. Whenever I felt tired or unfocused, I just pushed myself harder. Now, a meta-analysis from a few years ago pulled together more than 200 separate results from 77 groups of people, just under 1,000 participants in total. It compared sleeping 6 hours or less against sleeping more than six. Exercise performance came out about 7.5% lower. For maximum strength tests specifically, it was closer to 3%. My take as a doctor. Those averages show that losing sleep can hurt your performance. They don't really explain what happened to me. Most of the people in those studies were men, and the results were all over the place. The review left out people with ongoing sleep loss, sleep disorders, or shift work. And my trouble ran a week or two. The strength numbers came from maximum effort tests, and I was doing warm-up reps. So I see sleep loss as one possible reason. That study doesn't give me a clear answer. In 2003, researchers took healthy adults, all in their 20s and 30s, and put them through 2 weeks of restricted sleep. 35 people were assigned 4 hours, 6 hours, or 8 hours in bed each night. The 4 hour and 6 hour groups lost ground steadily on tests of attention and thinking, and the less sleep they got, the more they lost. Here's the part that stayed with me. As a group, people felt sleepier at first, and then that feeling barely changed. Their actual performance kept getting worse anyway. The researchers said people didn't really notice how much they were slipping. To be fair to the study, it didn't prove that the people doing worst were the least aware. That was a pattern across the whole group. I've noticed the same thing in my own head. Sometimes I read the same paragraph 4 times and still can't remember it. I open a presentation and can't finish a single slide without starting over. At home, I feel it emotionally. My patience runs thin, and I overreact to small problems with my kids. My take as a doctor. That study measured time in bed, not actual sleep. Only 6 of the 48 people were women, It was done in a lab. But here's what I do with it. If you keep struggling with a simple task, notice it before you judge yourself. A tough squat, a blank slide, a short temper. All of those can have many causes. I treat the change itself as the signal. If your usual performance drops, don't just push harder without asking why. There's a drive I need to tell you about. My wife was asleep next to me, an evening drive on a weekend trip in Germany. The week before, I hadn't slept well. I'd eaten at odd times, and I'd drunk far too much coffee. I fought off sleep for about an hour. I opened the window. I had another energy drink. I turned up the music. I kept driving. I do not remember falling asleep. I remember a loud rattling and the car shaking. When I looked up, we were off the road, in the grass. I think I lost about 10 to 20 seconds, but I can't be sure. I was probably doing around 130, maybe 140 kilometers an hour. No other cars were near us. The only damage was a few scratches that could be fixed. I pulled over at the next parking area, slept for a while, and then kept driving. I don't see that nap as proof that the rest of the drive was safe. Looking back, I know I was irresponsible. I put my life and my wife's life at risk. I can't let that happen again. For adults between 18 and 60, the Joint Sleep Medicine Consensus recommends 7 or more hours a night, regularly. That same statement links regular short sleep to worse performance, more errors, and a greater risk of accidents. I also took a saliva cortisol test while I was looking for a number that might explain what was happening. A systematic review of 190 studies found there wasn't enough evidence to establish any cortisol pattern in burnout. Part of the reason is that burnout itself gets measured differently from study to study. A separate review by 2 endocrinologists went through 58 studies and found no proof of the specific condition people call adrenal fatigue. In 16 of 26 studies looking at the daily saliva cortisol rhythm, exhausted patients looked no different from the controls. My take as a doctor. Those 2 reviews cover different questions. Research on burnout hasn't found a clear cortisol pattern you could diagnose anyone with. Adrenal fatigue is a separate idea, and not all 58 of those studies tested it directly. Neither review says burnout or exhaustion aren't real. My own test was just one part of my search, even though it didn't give me an answer. And you can now buy a cortisol curve as a stress score. So let me be precise about this. Saliva cortisol is a real test. Doctors use it to screen for Cushing's syndrome. The lab work is sound. What those kits skip is how much your own curve moves from one day to the next. A meta-analysis across 11 studies and more than 3,000 people found the agreement between one day and the next ran anywhere from zero to moderate. The morning cortisol rise, which is what a lot of these kits are actually selling you, scored 0.29. The authors call that poor. If someone sells you a cortisol score, ask them how many days they measured. From my experience in most work environments, you can usually only adjust your workload a little. I found it's easier to make changes to recovery, though that gets harder when demands go up or when things like caregiving, shift work, or money get in the way. There's a large analysis of workplace data on something called psychological detachment. That's the idea of your mind leaving work, the way your body does. Across 60 sets of results, covering more than 28,000 employees, heavier job demands went with less detachment. And across 23 sets, covering 7,000 employees, more detachment went with less exhaustion. My take as a doctor, job demands are more than just workload. The studies were very different from each other, and the results weren't always clear. Most of the data came from self-reports at a single point in time. So we can't say detachment lowers exhaustion. In my own life, I usually can't get rid of the work. I can often save a bit of time in the evening, on a weekend, or inside the day. One morning in our hallway in Berlin, the kids were getting ready for school, and I sat on the small stool where I put my shoes on. My back pain had been getting worse for weeks. I had been avoiding my socks all morning because bending over hurt. I tried to make the request sound casual, and I blamed it on being in a hurry. "Can you quickly help me?" My wife looked at me. She had reason to check, because I sometimes play tricks on her. "Really? Are you serious? You can do this on your own, right?" Soon I needed that help regularly. I published The Upward Arc in May 2025, where I organized good habits into three categories: activate, recover, and capacity. Looking back, I'd write it differently now. Activate means putting deliberate load on a system. A training session is load. So is sustained concentration. So is emotional control. So are the repeated decisions of a senior role. Recover is the time the system has to respond to that load. Capacity is the output that follows. Now I see those three as a loop, and I pay much more attention to what happens after the effort, finishing a workout or finishing a document. That's just the input. The real result is what I can do after my body or my mind has had time to respond. When that recovery time keeps shrinking, the same effort starts to cost more. This is the model I use in my own life, and I want to be straight with you. There isn't proof of one universal biological loop covering strength, thinking, and emotion. Sports medicine gives us the clearest version of it. Experts from the European College of Sports Science and the American College of Sports Medicine agree that good athletic training needs enough challenge, but not too much of it without enough recovery. Build up too much stress from training or from life, and coming back can take days or weeks. What I've learned at work is that load and recovery have to be considered together. If demands keep arriving and recovery stays short, pushing harder just adds more strain to the same system. Capacity levels off, then it drops. I break capacity into three areas: physical, cognitive, and social-emotional. Physical capacity is the bar suddenly feeling heavy. Cognitive capacity is the paragraph that won't stay in your head. Social-emotional capacity is the patience you usually have and can't reach today. That's the framework I use in my own work. My take as a doctor: if my usual performance drops for several days, I look at recovery before I prescribe myself more discipline. I ask whether I've actually given myself enough room to respond to what I've already done. And there's a time element to this. Sometimes it makes sense to push through and take more on. Then you recover, and you come back stronger. What doesn't work is pushing for long stretches with no break. So what to do with all this? First, set a minimum amount of sleep and stick to it. 7 hours a night is the consensus recommendation for adults between 18 and 60. That's a minimum for health, and 7 hours doesn't automatically mean you'll feel fully rested. Second, when I have to choose, I pick sleep. If it's a 5:30 workout or an extra hour in bed, I take the sleep. That's just what I do. No study has directly compared those two options. Third, take short breaks during your workday. I like a walk or some breathing. A meta-analysis of 22 samples found that breaks of 10 minutes or less gave a small lift in how people felt, but didn't make much difference to performance. Only the less demanding tasks showed a clear benefit, and longer breaks helped more. Fourth, stay in touch with people who have nothing to do with your work. When I'm in Berlin, or when my travel allows it, I try to meet a friend and talk about things outside my job. Stronger social relationships were linked to a 50% higher chance of survival across 148 studies and more than 300,000 people. How you define a social relationship changes the size of that link, and the study doesn't prove that social contact helps you recover. That's my reading of it, and it's why I keep the habit. Fifth, pay attention to slow changes over time. I watch for shifts in my physical, mental, and emotional capacity in ordinary tasks. How a warm-up feels, whether I have to reread a document, how I react to a small family problem. That's what I do, and it needs no device and no diagnosis. Recovery still isn't easy for me. I usually manage enough sleep now. Social connection is the one that slides. I still get caught up in work and realize late in the day that I haven't eaten properly or had enough water. Effort has paid off for me for most of my life, and I still value it. Now, I try to spend some of that discipline on sleep, on breaks, and on people who have no stake in my work. So here's my question for you this week. Which type of capacity drops first for you? Physical, cognitive, or social emotional? Just reply to the email this came in with one word. I read every response. Everything I mentioned today is fully referenced in the written edition at andrehiek.com. That's ANDREHEEG.com. Stay healthy, Andre.